Well, it's wonderful to see everyone here tonight for the Fall Speaker Series put on by our classes. I think it's really important that we get an opportunity as people of multiple churches. You know, pastors have come into this, so we thank Tom for that, and others of just trying to understand some current issues that are happening in our particular congregations and from an individual standpoint. So really thrilled to see everyone here tonight so we can hopefully learn together. Again, there's some of you that are not members, so just a couple housekeeping. Restrooms are directly out and on your right, my right, right as you go out. Drinking fountains are out there too if you need them, so please feel free to use those. And what we're going to do, I've talked with the Reverend Tom here a minute, and he is going to go till about 8 o'clock. And if people have some questions after that, he said he'd be willing to take another few minutes there. But at least from a timing, everyone should know that we're done by 8:15 at the latest. So based upon that, let's open with a word. Well, let me introduce Tom, and then we'll go back and have him say a prayer. How's that? Sounds better, huh? All right. But Tom Craig is recovery pastor at Evergreen. I think many of you have had an opportunity to see him or hear him, but neighbor just down the road. Married to Carolyn, as I understand, for a few short 40 years. Congratulations. 3 children and 5 grandchildren. So that's wonderful. One of the things I didn't know, and I don't know about all of you, but it's interesting to me when I read about a pastor who is sports-focused. Those two just don't even seem to go in my same realm. But here's a guy that's been a referee for basketball for how many years? 35 years as a basketball ref. And was an All-American playing basketball at Spring Arbor. Can you believe that? Man, I almost asked him for his autograph when he came in. It's a pretty good golfer, too, but he won't tell anybody about that. All right. The presentation tonight, and then we'll open with a word of prayer, is what I understand. It's really kind of about hard love and dealing with not only the individuals, but those trying to help when it comes to drugs and alcohol. So really look to get your guidance. Thank you for that. And we'll wait just a minute, and then we'll open with a word of prayer. No, you're all good. Don't rush. I already said there's some people that would just soon stay outside in the beautiful weather tonight. All right, shall we open with a word of prayer? Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we come to you in this evening. We thank you for allowing all of us to be together here and for you supporting the classes to have a Fall Speaker Series where we can all learn about things that affect all of us, maybe not directly, maybe not even in our family, but for sure in our families, our greater families, all of us can relate in some way, shape, or form. We want to thank you for letting Tom spend some time here tonight, and we look forward to learning from that and learning better how to deal with all of those, because we're all sinners. Guard, guide, and protect us. 90 Maloney Men.
Good to be with you tonight. I had, regards to basketball officiating, I really enjoy that. And I'm starting to work out, get in shape again. It gets a little harder every year. Last year, I had the privilege of working the Unity Christian, Holland Christian District basketball game last year. And that was a war. Yeah. That was a war. It was a really great ball game to work. Those kids played so hard, and it was fun. Really enjoyed it. So we're going to have some good ones this year, too. I'm Tom Crott, and I work at Evergreen Ministries. And just this past year, I've been there 16 years, and I've been pastor of Congregational Life and Recovery. And just this past year, I went full-time recovery. God has really been blessing the recovery ministry at Evergreen. One of the things, we got a lot of different, we got like 18 different 12-step meetings at Evergreen. and probably 300 to 400 people each week come through the doors of Evergreen to attend those meetings by God's grace. And it's really cool. And different kinds of meetings, AA, Gamblers Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, Overeaters, and some faith-based meetings as well. And it's exciting to see what God's doing with that. And then on Sunday night, specifically faith-based stuff, we have a recovery worship service every Sunday night. We have between 100 and 120 people that come out on Sunday night. And these are people that didn't go to church, let alone go to church on Sunday night. And they didn't get the memo, you're not supposed to go to church on Sunday night, I guess. And that was kind of funny. You can laugh if you'd like to. I'm kind of like sort of shepherding that group. And a lot of non-Christians are coming. Gay people are coming. God's given me the privilege to be able to, through my alcoholism, be able to touch with people that normally don't come around very much. And I'm really grateful for that. And so that's kind of what I'm doing. And I do a lot of counseling. There's a lot of folks come to our ministry from Georgetown classes. We do not proselytize people, and everybody that comes from the classes stays in their church, but they come to Evergreen because of the recovery stuff that they need. And it's a privilege to be able to help members of our classes out like that. We've had in Grand Rapids, there's a congregation where the president of the council has a serious drinking problem, and I've been working with them. And then in Holland, there's another church that has one of their elders that's got a real drinking problem, and I've been helping with them. So you get all around, you know, to be able to minister to people, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity. My last drink was, by the grace of God, was April 15, 2000. And so I'm really grateful to be a recovering alcoholic, and I'm still an alcoholic today. I'm as much an alcoholic as I was 19 years ago. I don't have alcoholism. I have alcoholism. Okay? So that means if I want to have a good and happy life, guess what? I have to abstain from alcohol. And so that's, if that's all I have to give up to have a good and happy life, I am happy to do that. That's fine. Okay? I've had enough to drink. I don't need any more to do that. So, I'm not against drinking, okay, at all. As a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're not against drinking. We're against drinking for people who have this illness that we have, this thing we have inside of us that develops this compulsion to want to drink alcohol when alcohol is introduced into our systems. I think we got to have healthy attitudes about alcohol. And that's really important. That's not what we're here to talk about tonight, though. So last year, I talked about alcoholism and drug addiction, and kind of we explored what that is. And tonight, I want to talk about family and a little bit about that, and then kind of segue into a topic that I would talk about. One of the things that's been really fun the last 2 years is I've started a family and friends education class on Thursday nights at Evergreen. We meet from 7 to 8:30. And the reason I started that is because I've really noticed a lot of times I get calls from family members to help them, and they are suffering. They don't know what to do. They're hurt and confused, and they're like, for me, I'm the alcoholic, and I can get help. I can go to AA. I can go to treatment. There's a lot of help for us if we're willing to take advantage of it. And for the family members, there's not a ton of stuff. You got Al-Anon, but there's not any other programs out there, really, you know, for family members to be able to get help from. And I just really felt compelled and called. So we've got to do something for family members. You know, and so on Thursday nights, we have a family and friends class. And it's totally free. We've probably got right now between 15 and 35 active members of that group that come to it. And, you know, most folks, I should look at one of the things I gave you a minute. Let me grab one of these. Let me go back here just a minute and grab a couple things. Most folks when they come, well, let me back up just a little bit. A lot of people, you know, when they come to class, they believe that they're going to learn how to get their alcoholic or their drug addict to stop drinking. Okay, which is impossible. Okay, you can't get an alcoholic to stop drinking. You can't. You could die on the cross for him, and that will not get him sober. You are powerless. See, our first step, and we'll talk about the steps in a minute. Our first step, and so that's the first thing they learn is you can't fix them. And we're here to talk about you. In fact, my goal for this class is to get your focus off of the alcoholic and on you, because your focus, you've forgotten about yourself. You've been so focused on trying to fix the alcoholic that you've lost yourself. You're totally consumed with trying to fix this person, and you're doing all kinds of crazy things. You're manipulating. You're looking for bottles. You're checking up on them. You're checking their phone. Just doing all kinds of nutty things. It's making you sick. All right? And it starts this mojo between the alcoholic and the family member, spouse, parent, child, that kind of just continues to steamroll right along. And it's amazing. You know, there's nothing that can make the addict or alcoholic get sober, but when the family member will stop, and one wheel stops, it's amazing what happens. We've had many, many situations where folks have started, see, people on the other side of the equation, let's just talk, I'll just refer to that as Al-Anon side, okay? That's the family side. AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, is the side for alcoholics. Al-Anon is the side for family members. And so the Al-Anon side is not for you to learn how to fix your alcoholic. The Al-Anon side is to help you survive and thrive and take your attention off the alcoholic, because you can't fix him. You just can't. I have to say, as an alcoholic, I am powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. An Al-Anon member has to say, I am powerless over my alcoholic and my life's unmanageable. And when you say that, that has profound implications for how you behave. When you say, I'm powerless over the alcoholic and my life is unmanageable. Because if you're truly powerless, that means you're going to stop trying all kinds of crazy things to get your alcoholic sober. You're going to stop fighting with them. You're going to stop arguing. You're going to stop manipulating. You're not going to be focused on them noon, night, and day. You're not going to enable them. Okay? You're going to begin to let them be responsible for the choices they make. You're going to stop lying for them. You're going to stop calling work for them. If they pass out drunk in the yard, it's summertime, you're going to let them stay in the yard overnight. You're not going to go pick them up. Okay, your friends call and they're too drunk to go out for dinner. You're going to tell your friends what's going on. You're not going to lie about it anymore. It's hard. It's really hard. Yes, it's hard, but getting healthy on the Al-Anon side is about choosing to live life in the light. It's about choosing to live life in the truth. Okay? And I think that's where God's called us to live it. And that creates, I think, when the Al-Anon person starts working their, what we call their program, that creates, I think, the best possible soil for recovery to take place. Because as long as the Al-Anon keeps acting the way they've been acting, it's just kind of this cycle just continues over and over and over. And it kind of in a weird way just feeds. Because I'll tell you what, I'll tell you how an alcoholic thinks when you try to help them. I hate you. I despise you. I'm never going to quit. I feel like a failure. I'm never going to be able to get sober. I'm ashamed of myself. I hate myself. And all those things. Those are all sick thoughts, and they're not correct thoughts, but that's what an alcoholic thinks when you as a family member, please, you try to get them to stop drinking, or you hound them about their drinking. There's no act of love that you can do that will motivate them to stop drinking. One of the great examples of that is in the 1970s, I had the best aunt in the world, Aunt Leona. She's a member of Holland Heights Christian Reformed Church. And my cousin was doing drugs and drinking like crazy. And she is dying of cancer, breast cancer. She's on chemo, puking her guts out. She spent the whole day washing and waxing my cousin's car. It's an act of love to motivate him to behave himself. It didn't work. Okay. I don't know a more sacrificial act a person can make than something being so sick and doing something like that. Okay? And so you can move them out, you could do anything you want. You are powerless over the alcoholic. I got a couple slides I should start getting into. We introduce people in family and friends to the three C's. The three C's. You did not cause it. You cannot cure it. And you cannot control it. So folks are coming to our class thinking they're going to tell me how to fix this this alcoholic, and they get hit with the three C's. It's quite a shock, don't you think? Probably. Disappointment, maybe. Shock. You did not cause it. It's not your fault. I would think that's kind of a relief for a wife or a husband or for parents. You didn't cause your kid's addiction. You didn't cause your husband's addiction, your wife's addiction. They're responsible for it, not you. You didn't cause it. Second thing is you can't cure it. I promise you. I've worked with thousands of alcoholics. Not one of them got sober because a family member helped them and motivated them to get sober. In fact, we had one of the guys I still go to meetings with, and his wife has been in Al-Anon for 30 years. Should have brought her to give the talk tonight, really. And had them talk to our class one night. And he's been sober years and years now. But he said, he made a great statement. He said, "You started to help me when you stopped trying to help me." You started to help me when you stopped trying to help me. That doesn't mean you don't care. It doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean you don't have concern. But it just is a recognition that you have to stay sane. Right? And you cannot be, especially, you know, if you're a parent and you have other children in the home. You've got one child that's caught up in their addiction, and it, say it goes 4 or 5 years. And all you're concerned about is chasing this addict. And you forget about these other children. Okay? See what I'm saying? It's not good for the family for you to be consumed with the addict. It's not good for the addict for you to be consumed with the addict, and especially it's not good for you. And it's the ultimate, to go this route is the ultimate act of trusting God. It is the ultimate act of trusting God because this is a fatal disease. People die from this all the time. Okay? That's the reality of what we're dealing with here. Is you can really work your program as an Al-Anon and get better and get more spiritually fit, but your alcoholic could still die. And whether you're focused on them or not, you're not going to be able to stop them from doing that. What you can do, as I made a statement earlier, is you can behave in such a way, or live in such a way, rather, that you will create circumstances where recovery is more likely to take place. Okay? Any questions at this moment? Probably some new thoughts for us. Okay? You didn't cause it. You didn't cure it. You can't control it. Now, I gave you a sheet that's got the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous on it, and then the AA promises below it. And if you turn it over, I've got the Al-Anon promises. Now, I want to talk about this for just a minute. Okay, I'm an alcoholic, all right? And I have done a lot of destruction, spiritual destruction to myself in my drinking. And I was. When I finally got help, I was flayed like a fish. I could hardly even pray. Just because of all if you're an alcoholic, you're a liar. You deceive people because nobody will tolerate the way you're drinking. Paul says, don't be drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit. So when you're drunk, you're cutting off your conscious contact with God. You know? And did you know this, that the state of inebriation is only about 20% of alcoholism? The rest of it is what it does to your corrupted mind when you're not drunk even. It's called an alcoholic mind. Alcoholics are selfish, surly, self-centered, not very nice many times. And so all of that is to say is it's not enough just for the alcoholic to get sober. Stop drinking. So abstinence is not the final goal of recovery. It's absolutely necessary for recovery, but it's not the goal. The goal of recovery is to be transformed spiritually. And that's what the 12 steps are for. All right? You know, let's put this in church language. Two works that Christ did for us, right? Justification, sanctification. Justification, we have nothing to do with except by faith. Right? We're good Calvinists, right? It's all God's work. Sanctification, however, involves some work. We have to cooperate with the Holy Spirit and surrender to God more and more so that the Holy Spirit can cleanse us and fill us and transform us. Okay, if we don't go to worship, if we don't spend time in prayer, if we don't do the good works of our faith, our sanctification level is not going to be very good. If we don't pray about our character defects or our sin that we want to not grab a hold of, you're agreeing with me about that. All right? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't say this to a group of new people in recovery. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are really the sanctification. Are you with me? They are the sanctification that the alcoholic needs to experience to be made new. Okay? So you work, we call it working the steps. It takes about a year. It took me a year to work all the steps under the guidance of a sponsor. And then it says, the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. So at the very end, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So there isn't a big spiritual bang where, voila, all of a sudden I'm sober. But it's very much process, covenantal, in its terms of our spiritual experience in AA, is as we're going through this process, we're transformed by God. Okay, and I remember specifically, I think for me, I think it was in the context of steps 8 and 9 of the, I was making my amends. And I felt like God just removed the desire to drink, just pulled it right out of my head. That was an incredible experience. It was in the process of the steps that God does that in the steps. He works miracles in our lives. And so all of that is to say, not drinking is not the goal, okay? You're just going to be a dry drunk, okay? And you need a change. We need to change because the AA Big Book says the same man will drink again. Okay? The same man will drink again. Same woman will drink again. Meaning if we aren't going to give ourselves to God and if we aren't going to seek spiritual change, we're very likely to drink again. Okay? So it's our relationship with God and the change that happens that keeps us sober. Got that? Okay? So when we talk about recovery, we don't just mean abstinence. Okay? Just below it, you see the AA promises, okay? At AA meetings, we start the meeting off, we read the steps, and then there are some groups, and the groups we have at Evergreen, that also read the promises. And so you've got new people that come in, like I came in for the first time. You're full of despair. You're self-loathing. You got problems, man, as a result of your drinking. And they read these promises, and you go, never. You guys are nuts. This will never happen for me. Now, let's just read these promises, okay? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. First time I heard that, I thought, you guys are crazy. It'll never happen for me. Now, as you know, in the Bible, context matters, right? Well, context matters here too. In the AA Big Book, each step of the 12 steps is thoroughly explained. You got 3 or 4 pages for each step, okay? So the promises are written in the middle of step 9, okay? So the point is, you're not going to experience these wonderful promises, okay, at the beginning of the train. It says there, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. And so the point is, in the sanctification process of recovery, we have to work with God. Okay? The favorite Bible verse of Bill Wilson was, faith without works is dead. Okay? And so he would say, action beats thinking every time. Okay? He'd say, show me, don't tell me. You know, for AA members, people are sick of your sorries. They want to see some action. Okay, so we would say things like, our thinking is messed up, and we would say we act our way to right thinking. We don't think our way to right living. Okay, and so that's the process. And so we have these wonderful promises. Okay, then I got challenged in our class. It was a great question. There's a gal started coming about 6 weeks ago, whose daughter is a drug addict, and she's worried sick about her daughter. And she says, now, and we're talking about working, because they've got to work the steps too. And the only way they're going to be able to live with any kind of serenity is they've got to have a spiritual experience on that side too. And she challenged me. She said, now, you mean to tell me that I can live a life, even when my daughter's using drugs, that I can have serenity in my life, even when she's using drugs? I said, yeah. And then I thought to myself, through all the years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, as I thought about Al-Anon, I thought, well, I wonder if Al-Anon has some promises. Well, AA's got promises. You know, I wonder if Al-Anon has some promises. Well, lo and behold, I searched, and if you'll turn the page, there are the Al-Anon promises. And it says, I'll just read the first one, if we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline, what have I been talking about, right? Working the steps, right? So I've been talking about. So the authors of the Al-Anon text say, if we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. And it gets better from there. However, the Al-Anon person has damaged themselves in the process of going nuts over their loved one that they're trying to care for. And so they need to work the steps and find grace and renewal and serenity, just like the alcoholic needs to do that, okay? So I've discovered all this stuff in working, teaching this new class. It's been wonderful. You know, I've really, really enjoyed it. And so it's about, you know, letting go of things you can't control. And trusting God. I mean, you really, if you're on the Al-Anon side, your only choice is to trust God. Okay? That's the only choice you have. But if you stop back and... if you stop acting crazy, puts the alcoholic in a very different kind of position in the relationship. And we've had a lot of alcoholics, had a couple in our year and a half ago, Jerry and Judy Jacks. I use their name and story because they would absolutely not care that I told you this. They are some of the most godly people I know. members of our church. They've both served as elders in our church. Son's a heroin addict. Okay? And we tried everything to get him sober. Jerry inherited a home in Ludington from his father. He's kind of beat up, but he let his son live in that home. And as we started talking about this stuff, he realized that by letting his son live in that home, he was supplying money for his son to buy drugs. He drove up there, kicked his son out of the house, and changed the locks on the house. And his son said, well, where am I supposed to stay? Dad said, I don't know. Three days later, the kid went into treatment, and he's sober now. That's a miracle, okay? Because Jerry had the courage to say, hey, I'm playing a part in my son's addiction, okay? I'm providing housing. He's saving money on housing, and that's going to the dope dealer. And it's about, so the folks on the Al-Anon side have to make some really, really hard decisions sometimes about it. But, so what are you going to do? Keep, love your kid to death? That's the other choice. You could keep providing housing because it's the quote-unquote loving thing to do, but you're going to love your kid to death. The kid had already OD'd four times. Okay? I mean, he's on the way to death anyway. So the kid has no chance, and the kid has no chance of getting sober as long as he's living in Jerry's house. So Jerry says, my son might die, but I'm not going to be a part of enabling him anymore. That took a lot of courage and faith on Jerry's part. But I think he did the right thing. So that's the kind of stuff we talk about and get into in our class. It is so exciting and fun. And you know, you can't make those kind of decisions apart from a fellowship of people. It's just like how, you know, we need the church fellowship so badly for our relationship with Jesus. And the same thing is true for recovering folks, is we need the support of other people who are on this journey with us that can encourage us. Because that was a hard decision for Jerry to make. And the group supported him. He talked about it with the group. And the group affirmed him and really helped him through that process. You understand what, see what I'm saying? You know, so meetings, that's a meeting. So meetings are so important for the getting well from addiction. We talk about a lot of things. That was just one example. Boy, am I wandering off here, but I'm having fun. I don't know if you guys are. So, okay, so that's the story of the 12 steps, the promises of AA and the promises of Al-Anon. And we have to work for them. Recovery isn't something where you just sit on your keister and say, oh, God, change me. You got to work for it. Okay? Now that's all right. All that stuff's over. I just want to give you an example of what a lesson might be. On a typical Thursday night, I usually teach a lesson for about 30, 40 minutes, and then we have discussion and sharing. Okay, and we've got everybody there. We've got parents who have addicts. We've got husbands who have wives. And we have wives who have husbands. And we have children who have parents who are addicted. And so we've got everybody there. And it's really fun. And so this is one of the lessons I gave. I'm going to go a little quicker through it than I normally would, obviously. Let's call this the red flags of dysfunctional helping. So when am I think I'm helping, but I'm really not. I'm hurting. I think I'm loving, but it's really hurting. There's a lot about this that's kind of counterintuitive. Because most people we can help with a bailout of some money. They'll appreciate it. It's going to go for the right things. Right? You can't do that with an alcoholic or an addict. The only thing worse than an alcoholic without money is an alcoholic with money. That was funny too. Okay? All right? Okay? This is a little cartoon I had. You know the red flags? There's a guy sitting, pointing at a bull. He said, "I'm disappointed. If anyone should have seen the red flags, it was you." I like that. I thought that's pretty funny. So, okay. Red flag one. It's increasingly obvious that your help and giving fosters dependence, irresponsibility, and incompetence or poor character. All right? It's increasingly apparent that the help you're giving is fostering dependence, irresponsibility. You see, when you're doing something, I define the bad help kind of like this. Don't do anything for an alcoholic that they should be doing for themselves. A lady said to me, "Well, if I don't do my son's homework, he's going to flunk out of high school." I said, "Maybe your son needs to flunk out of high school." Don't do anything for the alcoholic that the alcoholic should be doing for themselves. Okay? Because it's just fostering dependence and irresponsibility. Red flag two. The other has violated numerous agreements, required many bailouts, and hasn't used the help to do as promised. That's a very common thing that happens. "Oh, I need $500 to pay this bill or for my rent or whatever." It goes to the dope man or whatever. Okay? Happens all the time. So in that kind of, that's a big red flag. Big red flag. Three, the help we're giving helps someone to stagnate, become stuck in an age-inappropriate stage of life, maybe prevents them from developing a needed life skill or professional skill. That's what another thing that happens is when we take care of the business that someone else should be taking care of, they're stymied in their growth. Four. Red flag number four, your helping or giving requires your dishonesty or somehow compromises your integrity. See, recovery is about living life in the light. One of the things that helped me get sober is when my wife said, "Tom, no more secrets." That was powerful. She said, "Tom, no more secrets." You see how that changes the ball field? That's powerful. And so you need a loved one needs to have the courage to say, "I'm not lying for you. I'm not covering for you. I'm not punishing you. I'm not punishing you, I'm not angry with you, but you are going to be responsible for your behavior." Because without that, they don't have a chance to get sober. See what I'm saying? Okay, number five, if you have the impression you're getting manipulated, you probably are, okay? That's a big red flag. You're being manipulated into giving help. Tears or a sob story or whatever. Red flag six. Your help is unsustainable given your present resources. It'll drain you dry. Alcoholics and drug addicts do not have a conscience about taking your money, whether it hurts you or not. Because all they care about is their next drink or their next drug. I didn't fix the numbers here. Oh my. All right. Red flag 7 or 8. All right. Your help makes it easier to keep making poor choices about physical health, getting professional help, avoid taking their medication, losing weight, working their program of recovery. Again, anything that they should and can be doing for themselves. I mean, again, all right, I'm letting you stay here, but you're not doing anything to help yourself. You know, I care more about you, your physical health, and when you care more about their health than they do, there's a problem here, okay? That's a big red flag. Number 9, help your helper get, now this is, say there's a group setting. Sometimes we can enable a group that's dysfunctional. In a group setting, fails to inspire a cooperative attitude where everyone helps. Instead, it leads to others to slack and leaves you feeling taken advantage of. Don't really want to talk about that one too much. Red flag 10, you find that what you intended as a one-time modest offer of help or giving has morphed into an unintended long-term obligation that you resent or find burdensome. Red flag 11, you're in a self-sacrificing relationship that is more about enmeshment and not helping. That's a picture of two people together. Enmeshment is really where you've probably seen a situation where someone is so intensely involved in helping another person that you really can't tell where the one person ends and the other person begins. That's enmeshment. It's not healthy. There's two people here, and you need to be able to tell the difference. And so that's something to think about, okay? Let's keep going here. You're willing to overlook, this is very common, you're willing to overlook the ill effects of your helping and giving because it makes you feel like a good person. Okay? That's called codependency. So what can we do to express care? We can listen. We need to think about who is responsible for what. That's really important. Okay? We need to ask for help. And we can join a support group. I say this to my group all the time. This is never, ever, ever about getting angry. Okay? This is never, ever about striking back, getting even. Okay? This is about you drawing a boundary and living in reality and deciding you need to be responsible for yourself. And I have been responsible for your stuff, but you need to be responsible for yourself. Because when I'm responsible for it, it just fuels the alcoholism and fuels the addiction. Okay, that's about all I got for you tonight. Now, do you guys have any questions you'd like to ask me? Yes, sir.
If I hear you correctly tonight, the Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever that program is.
Yes.
Does it work without coming to know God?
Not really. Yeah, you know, it starts out in the third step with the God of your understanding. And we don't push people. You know, a lot of people, by the time they get through to the end, come to faith. I have a very good friend, sober 30 years in AA, became a Christian after he was sober 10 years. Okay? Now, I think one of the, now, so how does this happen, okay? It's a great question, and I think as I thought about this theologically, I think as a Reformed Christian, I believe in common grace. Okay? So I believe that the goodness and grace of God is given in the steps, even though they're not serving specifically Jesus. I don't think they're trying to purposely commit idolatry. I think that the steps were written. Reverend Samuel Shoemaker was an Episcopal priest who really helped Bill and Bob write the steps, really encompass New Testament spirituality. And so I think there's spiritual power in working the steps. And I would look at an organization like Alcoholics Anonymous and say it's common grace. Now, one of the things we have with our Baptist brothers and sisters is, see, in the Reformed faith, we would say it's Christ-redeeming culture. In the fundamentalist world, it's Christ against culture. And so as a Reformed Christian, we're not afraid to work with an organization like Alcoholics Anonymous because they're doing, God's using them. They're doing good in this world, okay? And other organizations that aren't specifically Christian. In the fundamentalist world, you've heard of Celebrate Recovery. Celebrate Recovery has helped a lot of people, and I want to say that straight up, okay? So I'm not here to criticize it. But from a theological perspective, I don't like it, okay? Because it is they see themselves as a replacement of AA. And I want to say that there is so much good AA all over the world. Why not partner? Why not use it? You know, I went out when I first got to Evergreen. I went out to a conference at Saddleback, where it started, and the Celebrate Recovery. I just wanted to see what it was all about, and I was there for 90 seconds, and I said I can get on the plane and go home right now, because there were the people there at Saddleback were walking around with T-shirts that said, "The Real Recovery." That's like us inviting other Christians from the community to have dinner with us and us saying to them, "We're the real Christians." Okay? And 99% of what Celebrate has learned about recovery is from Alcoholics Anonymous, but now because they have Jesus, they are elevating themselves. And that, by the way, that is the exact opposite of spirituality of recovery. It's about humility, you know. So your question led me on a tangent there, but what's a great question? Because I love theology, and I've got to think about, you know, I've tried to think hard about how this recovery ministry fits with our Reformed faith, and I think it does. And and we've tried to build it in that way.
Yourself,
sure.
It's a good tool to use.
Yeah, and I've been very, very much written about it at Evergreen, and everybody knows why we're doing what we're doing, theologically. So, yes.
You said that the Father could not let his son live in the home.
Yep.
So what's a wife to do?
Well,
kick him out?
Each situation has its unique circumstances, okay? And every spouse needs to take their own journey. So I have seen spouses that have lived happy lives that have lived with an alcoholic for 30 years, okay? And they've been able to, they've worked the Al-Anon program, and they've been vigilant in that program, and they have felt that God has wanted them to stay there. I have seen others say, if I stay in this situation, it's going to kill me. And I've got to ask him to leave. Okay?
Why this meeting is painful.
Yeah.
28 years ago today, my dad.
Okay.
And it's been freeing.
I, I can see that. I can understand that. Yes.
He was a different type.
Yep.
I think it's a mental illness.
I think there's... Right. Sometimes mental illness coincides with it. Right? You know, my mother was an alcoholic. She died of breast cancer, but it was really her alcoholism that prevented her from doing appropriate self-care. That the breast cancer got out of control before she really went and got care for it. So my mom really died of alcohol. I mean, they can say breast cancer, but it was really alcoholism that killed her. And you know, some guys will say, and I've seen people with serious mental illness get sober in AA. And the reality of it is people will say to me, I'll say the same, people will say to me, I tried AA and it didn't work for me. I say, well, what is your definition of try? Well, I bet it's not my definition of try. Did you go to 90 meetings in 90 days? Did you not drink? Did you get a sponsor? Did you start working the steps? No, no, no. Okay. You got to try it. Then you've tried it. Then you've tried it. AA may not be for everybody. I'm not saying it is. Okay, but for folks that go in and try, really try, it's going to work, I think. Now, there are some who are right, too gravely ill mentally to be able to make good decisions. Sometimes, and sometimes it's hard, maybe the, you know, and the alcohol makes everything worse. Okay? If you got depression, you're going to have depression worse with alcohol. If you've got bipolar, you're going to have bipolar worse with alcohol. If you have schizophrenia or any mental illness, alcohol is going to multiply it. And you really can't tell what you're dealing with until that person's been detoxed. Can you get an accurate read on the person's mental health? So, great question. Thank you. Sorry about your loss. Yeah, it's hard. Yes. Yes. Oh, you mean,
you know what I'm saying?
The spouse or the parents? You mean?
This is a situation. My brother's an alcoholic.
Yep.
And his wife blames my parents.
His wife does. Well, that's nice. Yeah.
She talked about said it, but you know that she
does. Well, it's, you know.
And I don't know what advice to give to my parents.
I would just say.
Besides this, which I tell them.
Tell, you know, I'd like to talk to her.
Yeah.
My door's open. And, you know,
I feel like
say you codependent little twerp. How long are you going to provide excuses for that drunk? Okay?
Cause he's in recovery. He's doing very
good. Good.
Doing
well, then he ought to know better then. If he's sober, he should know better. But I don't know. Is he working recovery? Okay? Great question.
Just keep saying,
yeah. You know, yeah, I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 16 years old, and I thought I discovered life. I loved it. I think there was something about me that was wired differently than my friends. I think that's part of becoming an alcoholic. Yeah, there was some stuff from childhood, probably, but there was also that innate biological stuff, you know. And as I look back on my drinking, even before you would say I was drinking alcoholically, I know I always enjoyed it more than my friends did. I always looked forward to it more than my friends did. I didn't realize that was a warning, a red flag. Okay, you know, and I just did. I mean, we were at Gun Lake State Park, sitting around the campfire with my aunt and uncle and my parents. And my Uncle Don and my dad said, well, we'll let Tom be a big boy tonight and have a glass of beer. I had that beer, and it was, wow, this is great. Really? I just thought it was wonderful, you know, and so I had the wiring to be an alcoholic, okay? So I can't touch the stuff. Yep. It wasn't my parents' fault, okay? That's on me. I have to take responsibility for it if I'm going to get better. Yeah, can't blame it on my toilet training, you know? Yeah.
I just want to say something about
awesome.
The son.
Yeah.
When I first got there, you know,
yep.
A quick fix.
Yep.
And that's not
right. Right.
And then I became.
Okay, good. I bet it was.
But it was the most
awesome.
Because I think he really and you know, somewhere in his head he knew that's what should happen.
Yeah.
But you know, he certainly wasn't going to do it.
No. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Sure, sure.
And it wasn't going to happen
anymore. Good for you.
And you know, we just.
You don't. You have no guarantees. No, you don't. That is so beautiful. So, 14 years, this dear lady went to Al-Anon. 14 years, right? And for your journey, you got to the point finally where you said, you're out of here.
And now I'm in a position.
And that was a pivot point.
Where I can help the new ones come.
Absolutely. You know, yes. One of the AA promises that means a lot to me is we will neither regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will see how our experience can benefit others. So the best thing that I have going for me is to share my experience with alcohol to help other people. So I freely talk about it. Because it was an expensive lesson. Okay, I might as well use it, right? You know, and that sounds like God's work, I think. That's how God works in our lives, I think. And so, you know, you guys can go. It's 8 o'clock. I'll be happy to stick around and talk if anybody wants to do that. So thank you very much for your attention. I enjoyed it.